Matt Mittler, still at the helm.
And we're heading back to the States for part three of our story. A beacon of light. Multiple meanings? You betcha. This is Sunday Night Noir. Let's get started, shall we? With chapter 60.
Nurse!
The cot was on its side, the patient lumped like a rag doll on the floor of the airship.
Nurse!
There were calls all through the hull. The plane lurched again, and Kaufman's back slammed into the steel ribcage.
Goddamn turbulence,
cursed one dour-faced nurse. Her partner, big-boned and auburn-haired, climbed out of her seat and yanked open a large black bag.
They couldn't take a better route. This is worse than being shot at.
Check the litters! Get 'em back up on the cots!
This whack obviously pulled rank. She had high, chiseled cheekbones and widespread eyes that burned green. The command sent the other two tearing up the aisles. Boss Whack whipped her head over to Kaufman to signal him, too. He braced himself against the ribs of the ship and went down the row of beds. Many of the men had been jostled, if not thrown to the ground. He'd been hearing their moans and cries from the moment the plane took off. For most, this had been their first flight, and the nurses had spent hours grappling with them, men whose jangled nerves only added an extra helping of crisis to whatever medical needs they had. The Mercy Squad had sped around the beds, handing off supplies to each other, checking pulses, bandages, and dressings, dosing morphine where it was needed, or a shot of oxygen, holding the bag for a grunt to spew. They hadn't broken stride once. Flawless. A World Series triple play. Eventually, things had settled. That's when the pilot issued a warning to buckle up. But the warning was no preparation for this. The aircraft was smacked to the side, then smacked again. It bucked against the storm like a wild bull. Men were howling. Catheters and IVs had become unplugged. Bodies were twisted and hanging from slings, caught up in bedsheets and bloody tubing. Kaufman spotted a soldier bent backwards over the end of his cot, a beefy colored man with a body cast that cased his torso from the neck to just below his ribs. His eyes were rolled back in his head, and his mouth made silent cries for help, jaws opening and closing like a fish out of water. Kaufman dashed to his side. The guy had to weigh at least 200 pounds, the plaster adding an additional 40. Kaufman tried to hoist him, but didn't have the strength. He dropped to the floor and squirmed between the patient and the bed, leveraging himself under the thick of the armature. Pressing down, he was able to slowly inch the guy upwards. He brought his knees in under him and, shouldering the weight, lobbed the guy back onto the canvas. Kaufman got up and wiped his brow. He looked at the soldier whose face remained contorted, arms jerking spasmodically at his sides. Kaufman reached for a blanket to cover him, then saw the spot in the middle of the guy's chest, a tiny red spot. As he watched, it began to spread, like watercolor on paper, red seeping into the white plaster casting.
"He's bleeding!"
Kaufman heard himself cry.
"Nurse! He's bleeding!"
"Move over!"
Green Eyes shoved Kaufman aside and examined the blot as it continued to expand.
"Cutters!"
she called.
"Do we got cutters?"
The call came back.
"No, we don't got shit!"
Kaufman could see Big Bones by a litter at the back, yanking the inflation tubes out of a life jacket for God knows what.
"Fuck this,"
griped Green Eyes and turned to Kaufman.
"Here, take these."
She reached into her apron pocket and pulled out a pair of bandage scissors. Kaufman froze.
What do I do?
She pointed to the red-washed cast.
Hack away. I'll be back.
Kaufman stared at the stain. It was now the size of a football.
Jesus,
he said to himself. He knelt beside the cot and stabbed into the plaster casing.
Sorry, fella,
he said to the soldier. But the soldier didn't hear him. His head rocked back and forth, his mouth straining open wider and wider. Kaufman chopped away, the plaster broke in chips that clung to the gauze. He worked his way up the side of the cast, trying not to think about what would happen if he missed.
Good. That's good.
It was the head nurse again. She had a second pair of scissors and proceeded to follow along Kaufman's path, severing the undercloth.
How you doing, bucko?
She asked the soldier, who emitted a wordless moan.
Don't worry. You're in safe hands.
Kaufman looked up to the nurse for guidance. She gave him a wink. He jabbed away, cutting a path up to the armhole and then across the shoulder. The nurse skirted over to the other side of the cot and punched a series of holes on the opposite side of the cast.
Great. Here we go.
And she reached across the soldier's bloody plaster mound and stuck her fingers in the opening on Kaufman's side.
Now!
Kaufman gripped the sides as they parted, holding down the back half and prying up the top, as the cast cracked and opened like a clamshell, and blood spilled onto Kaufman's nice, clean khakis. He could hardly breathe. The soldier finally found his voice, a horrifying wail.
Don't worry, it just looks bad.
The nurse balled up a towel and placed it on his chest. She grabbed Kaufman's hand and placed it on top of the towel.
Keep the pressure steady.
Kaufman followed orders. The nurse dashed off again, and in a moment came back with a bowl of water and another towel.
First, we gotta wash him off.
She worked her way around, dabbing the blood, cleansing the skin.
Now lift.
Kaufman removed the towel, and she blotted the wound. He'd expected a gaping hole, but it was only a few inches long, a ripped opening on a stitched track that went from the base of the throat down to his gut. His dark skin was further darkened with bruises and burn marks. What was missing there beneath the incision? The nurse placed a clean towel over the open wound.
Hold.
Kaufman held. She wiped the surrounding area with a splash of iodine, then loaded a syringe and slipped the tip under the skin and around the towel, piercing every few inches. Then she pulled a curved needle out of her bag and thread it, snipping off the end with the scissors.
I need you to keep blotting away the blood. Can you handle that?
Yes, nurse,
he answered and bit his lower lip.
Peggy.
Yes, Peggy.
Kaufman looked up at her, and she held his eyes, then nodded toward the towel. He took a breath and began blotting.
Name's Mo.
Welcome to the second evac, Mo,
she said with a crooked smile that poked a dent in her left cheek. Then, without missing a beat, she sewed the soldier up.
Have to wait till we get a new cast, but these bandages will do for now.
Peggy patted the newly swathed chest, then placed her hand on the soldier's head, rubbed his temple gently with her thumb.
You still with us there, Private?
She asked in a crackly voice.
Pain,
he answered feebly. She kept massaging his brow with her free hand, reached into her bag and took out another hypodermic needle. She loaded it single-handedly and gripped the syringe between her teeth, tipped a bottle of alcohol onto a cotton ball, and in one move smeared the ball over an exposed area on the fellow's shoulder, grabbed the syringe, and jabbed it into his flesh. He gasped, as if the shot hurt more than the other injuries.
That ought to do the trick,
she said, turning to Kaufman.
Keep a watch.
And she was gone. Kaufman imagined her on horseback, white stallion rearing. Hiyo Silver and away.
Can you turn up the radio?
The soldier asked faintly. Kaufman was surprised to have the object before him suddenly become human.
No radios, pal. Sorry.
He sat on the edge of the stretcher. The soldier opened his eyes, bloodshot, half-focused.
No radio? Nope. You're on a plane. They'd definitely be trying to kill me. Safer at the fucking field hospital.
His eyes closed.
Turn on the radio, please. I'm dying.
You're not dying.
They opened again.
I need my music.
You'll be home safe in New Jersey before you know it.
New Jersey? Man, send me back to the front.
Kaufman smiled.
What's your name, soldier?
Private First Class Amos C. Monroe.
He held out a meaty mitt. Weak now, but Kaufman could tell it had potential. He took the promising hand.
Moses Kaufman, he said.
You a doctor?
Nope, not even Red Cross. I honestly don't even belong here.
Who does?
The soldier closed his eyes again, tried to stifle a cough. His body tensed and spasmed.
Looks like it hurts pretty bad.
He nodded. The morphine was starting to kick in. Kaufman watched as his flattened features went slack.
Music,
he mumbled.
Sorry, pal. No radio.
The eyes slid open slightly, redder, wetter.
Sing.
Sing?
Kaufman was still holding the soldier's hand. It had gone completely limp.
I warn you, I'm no Dick Hames. What sort of song you want to hear, Private?
Sentimental Journey.
You gotta be kidding me.
Sentimental Journey, Doris Day.
Yeah, I know who sings it all right. You like Doris Day?
Got a yen for blondes.
He grinned, eyes closed now, lips stretched wide across his dark moon face.
Sing.
I'm also not a blonde.
Don't interrupt. Guy gotta make believe sometime, don't he?
Yep. Maybe sometime a guy do gotta make believe. Kaufman cleared his throat and proceeded in a shaky baritone.
Gonna take a sentimental journey. Gonna take a journey home.
Want a drink?
Kaufman collapsed in the bucket seat beside Pegeen. He took a breath and held it for a moment.
Sorry, I don't drink,
he answered wistfully. She leaned into the aisle and shouted out,
Gladys! Coffee! Black!
Gladys, the one who'd been making do with life jacket tubes, brushed a kinky bush of hair off her freckled forehead, sauntered over, gave Kaufman the big eye.
And for the new surgeon? She asked with a mock curtsy. Nothing. He don't drink.
Pegeen shot an elbow into his side.
Hope you eat, at least. May made some egg salad.
Once again, the aircraft was stable. The patients were stable. Kaufman was stable. He took another bite of egg salad and looked over at the khaki-clad Trinity. May was resting her head on Gladys's shoulder. Gladys and Pegeen were holding hands. Kaufman laid his head back against a musty bedroll and closed his eyes.
Chapter 61.
Three whacks? I'm not funding a joyride.
But Kaufman didn't appreciate the drollery. In fact, he didn't appreciate anything about Maura Walsh right now.
What are you doing here?
He asked.
I just thought maybe I'd surprise you for a change.
She placed her hands on her hips and rolled onto the toes of her sneakers.
Well, I'm surprised, all right. How'd you know? How'd you even get clearance?
Maura's face pinched up.
You're not the only one with connections, Mr. Detective.
Then she noticed the bloodstains on his trousers.
Oh, my God. What's that?
It's not mine. One Private First Class Amos C. Monroe. But don't crinkle your upholstery. He's in good hands.
Kaufman massaged his brow, glanced up at the smudgy evening sky. New Jersey. The confidence he'd accrued began to seep out of his heels into the tarmac. Who was this kid? And did he still even care about the crummy Walsh case? What's one murderer, when there's a country full of 'em still at large?
So, who knows you're here?
He tossed it off as he strode past her.
No one,
she answered, trying to catch up.
No one?
No one.
Does Clayton know?
I told you no one. No, Clayton doesn't know.
She snorted.
Bradley doesn't know. No one else knows.
He spun around.
Then how the hell did you find me?
She stopped, began to fumble through her handbag.
Your telegram. You sent me a telegram, remember?
Kaufman didn't respond. Maura dug deeper into the clutch.
Well, I just replied to the army base and asked where and when the next transport would be coming in. They told me McGuire Air Force Base. And tonight, et voila.
She withdrew a roll of lifesavers, held it out to Kaufman. He didn't budge. She peeled back the foil, hunted down the stack till she found a pineapple, and popped it in her mouth.
It was easy getting onto the field,
she added, then lifted the hem of her pencil skirt to reveal a slice of creamy knee. Kaufman turned, resumed his gait.
Told the guard I had a special gift for my beau.
She sniggered, trotting behind him.
Hadn't seen him in 2 whole years. Then I started to cry.
She feigned distress.
I was just so thankful he was still alive.
You can quit spinning yarn, he quipped. Even grieving mothers aren't told when their sons are coming in. If I want drama, I'll listen to Norman Corwin.
You don't believe me?
Doesn't matter either way. You come by train?
I drove.
Drove?
Only took 4 hours.
At 35 miles an hour?
She shrugged her shoulders.
Oh, I'm so sorry, officer. I forgot about the limit. It just feels like victory is in the air.
Funny, he'd never noticed before what a virtuoso she was. But that's the mark of a great actor. The technique is invisible. They came up to the Delahaye, and Kaufman patted the gleaming enamel. Machines. They're more dependable. Maura climbed into the driver's seat.
No baggage?
She asked. Kaufman slipped in beside her.
I'm traveling light these days.
They sped off toward the city. Double the limit. He clicked on the radio, but she snapped it off. She wanted her money's worth, and pronto. Pining as if for her long-awaited lover. Kaufman kept mum, but she became more insistent. Problem was, Kaufman really didn't have anything. Well, he did have something, but it was more than he wanted to tell her. They took the Lincoln Tunnel. Maura wanted to drive through the new tube. Made Kaufman just about as uncomfortable as flying. She tore down the chute like it was a slalom, relishing the wheel, being in control. Maybe that's why she was so desperate to get the goods on her brother. Questions. How they undermine the foundations of comfort. Kaufman propped a hand on the dash and watched the hair dance off her face. Chin lifted, mouth parted, lips drawn back. The white tiled walls whipped by behind her, tenaciously holding back the Hudson. Careening through Midtown, Mara announced she'd booked rooms at the Waldorf. What did he expect? Kaufman resigned himself, but insisted she pull over so he could make a call.
Why can't you just wait until we get to the hotel?
Because I can't. You should be able to relate to that. Pull over.
Pouting, she snugged the Delahaye to the curb.
Don't know where you'll find a phone at this hour.
Across the street, blue-mirrored windows and a red neon sign that said, Bar.
That'll do,
Kaufman said and exited the car.
Moses, she called after him, this probably isn't a good idea.
None of this is a good idea, kid.
And he disappeared through the double doors. He got a handful of change from the bartender and was mid-call when Mar appeared into the booth. He jerked the door closed and turned his back.
You sure you don't have a Miller registered? Henry Miller?
He glanced over at her, arms at her sides, head hanging, an orphan on the streets.
What about Whitman? Walt Whitman. Yeah. No, I'm not joking. Can you just look? You had a Miller? He checked out last week. Perfect. Thanks.
He dropped the receiver on the hook. Goldstein had undoubtedly found a more hospitable abode. What was Charlene's last name? Allegra had looked it up when they broke into the library. Hadn't he filed it away? He knew his Dewey decimals. Damn. Now his head was all full of Allegra. He could almost hear a quintet picking up a sassy syncopated beat, tapping on the glass. Mara slumped against the door, eyes imploring. Kaufman would just have to try Goldstein tomorrow. Tonight, he was on his own.
Can we go now?
She whined.
This place is creepy.
Sure it was creepy. This was the kind of place millions of sad sacks called home. Lonely people, broken people. Certainly not Mora's people. The bar was dank and clouded with cheap smoke. Four patrons perched on the plank, slurping their swill. Nobody in the booths. Kaufman escorted her to a spot in the back and tucked her into a tufted banquette.
What are you drinking?
Moses, I don't think we should be here.
Make a choice or I'll make it for you.
Please don't drink. You said you never drink when you're working.
Singapore Sling? Nicky Finn?
Moses, please.
You want me to talk, right?
She didn't seem so sure anymore.
Yes, well.
But she couldn't finish. He went over to the bar, came back a moment later with two drinks and a bag of beer nuts.
I got you an Alexander. Drink up, then we'll talk.
He opened the cellophane bag and began to pop nuts in his mouth, one at a time, watching as she sipped her drink. Couldn't tell if she liked it. Too sweet for his tastes. He considered his seltzer and lime. Not sweet enough. The bag was crushed in the ashtray, and Mara's glass was empty. Kaufman leaned across the table. The red vinyl seemed to engulf her.
I still don't have a bead on who killed your brother.
She dabbed her lips with a cocktail napkin, combed three fingers through her hair.
But I got a gander at Patty's war record.
She looked over at the bar. The patrons were down to three. She moved her glass around the checkered tabletop, as if searching for a perfect move.
He roughed up other soldiers, avoided any real combat, and probably killed a prisoner.
The glass settled in position. Check.
Patrick killed a Nazi?
Afraid not. A camp prisoner. And somehow or another he got his noggin clonked. Haven't figured that one out yet. But I do figure your pop pulled for the pin. How else can you give a purple heart to a perfect heel?
She looked up. Her eyes had the glint of a switchblade.
Speculation means nothing, Mo. I need facts. I need to know everything.
What was her angle? Half the time it seemed like this was all a lark. The other half, like the fate of the world was at stake.
Everything?
He asked.
You want to know about camp survivors, barely better off than the dead? You want to know about the methods of torture and execution? Suffocation? Incineration? How about the real heroes dropping dead in field hospitals while your lousy brother gets a first-class ticket home and a 21-gun salute? You sure you want to know?
I need to know, she repeated coolly. Everything.
He studied her for a moment. She didn't care who killed her brother. She just wanted the dirt. But there was still more to it. Too bad he hadn't connected with Goldstein, find out what she'd been up to the last couple of weeks.
When I've got it, I'll hand it over. But until then...
Kaufman bottomed his drink, crunched some ice between his teeth.
You know, I'm just as much in the dark as you are, kiddo.
She didn't exactly look disappointed.
What's next, then?
She asked casually.
I may have a witness.
A witness?
Now she was getting all sparkly.
He was there?
Yeah, he was there. And now he's here.
Who?
A guy.
He must have a name.
Doesn't mean anything yet. It's just a name.
Moses, I drove all the way down from Newport.
She laughed, grabbed the crumpled bag off the ashtray and threw it at him.
What name, you nincompoop?
He felt his shoulders go slack.
Yakov Levitsky,
he answered.
You happy now?
She leaned back, propped herself with one arm on the seat, looked at Kaufman smugly.
Yes, I am.
Well, I'm not.
Kaufman stared into his empty seltzer. Sapped. A double would come in so handy right about now.
Anyway, there's still work to do.
Tomorrow,
she said with a wicked half-smile.
Now, how about another drink?
She slid her hand across the table, her fingertips inching up to his. He didn't flinch. He didn't move at all. Chapter 62. Mara ended up getting her own drink, and another one after that. Kaufman let it slide. He was betting that more intoxication would mean less interference. It was a good bet, but then he was a man who usually knew the odds. At least when he was sober. The Waldorf was straight across town. He hadn't been behind the wheel in 4 years, but wasn't about to let her take the driver's seat. He kept to the speed limit and tried to shut out the past. Aside from the nausea, the headache, and a mild irregularity in his heartbeat, he did pretty well. As promised, there was a reservation in her name. One reservation. And that one reservation was for one suite. And that one suite had only one bed. He dumped her on that one bed, closed the door, and flopped down on a couch in the sitting room. He was out like a light. Strange. He'd had no dreams that whole time in Germany. At least none he could remember. Tonight's was vivid. This old black servant looks at him from under hooded eyelids, raises a tray with a glass of champagne, turns, and slowly strolls away. Kaufman follows him along a blindingly white corridor. The servant seems to be moving at a stately pace, and yet Kaufman can't keep up. Then the walls begin to blacken. darkness seeping in on both sides. The servant vanishes into the shadows. The corridor begins to descend. It's more and more steeply inclined. He begins to speed up as the angle increases. He can barely keep his footing. Now he's propelled downward, his feet flying. He strains to remain upright, trips and falls, tumbles headlong through a dark void, and lands in a pit. There's a young girl in there, huddled, barefoot. Kaufman kneels beside her. He places a hand on her shoulder. She looks up. It's Mara. Her eyes close. Her lips part. He leans in for a kiss. As he comes closer, she begins to age. Not actually age. Her hair doesn't turn gray. But the skin on her face tightens. It starts to cling to her skull as though she had no muscle, no fat, as if her skin were a silk stocking stretched over bleached bone. No, she's not aging at all. She's becoming a cadaver. Kaufman tries to back away, but her skeletal hand lands on his knee. It gropes its way, inching up over his thigh, moves up between his legs. The dry bones begin to stroke the regrettable bulge in his pants. Thumb and forefinger gently reach up and pull the zipper down.
No!
The voice woke him. He looked around. It was his own voice. He shook off the dream and dismounted the couch. Except for an urgent call to urinate, everything seemed to be in order. But the bedroom door was ajar. He peeked in. Mara was gone. And on the dresser, she'd left him a grand. Chapter 63. Besides finding the prisoner, Kaufman also had to find suitable attire. As fond as he'd become of army casual, it was best to abandon bloodstains and body odor for a more professional presentation. He boarded the 3rd Avenue L heading downtown and hopped off at Houston. The Lower East Side was as likely a spot as any for Ikak Levitsky. It was also a likely spot for a nice summer wait. For $1,000 he could buy a warehouse's worth.
How much?
The shop owner bobbed his furry face up and down like his neck was hinged with a spring.
For you, my friend, $45. I'll give you 20.
Furface threw up his arms.
My friend, I have 6 children and 2 cats. You are killing them all. 25 and throw in that hat.
Kaufman pointed to a fedora atop a stack of folded shirts.
40. For 40, I get the suit, hat, a silk tie, and 2 shirts.
Fur pulled on his stringy beard, twisted it into a braid, and stuck the tip in his mouth. He sucked on it thoughtfully.
No silk, only rayon.
Kaufman rolled his eyes.
Oh, we're gonna get stuck on the fine print? Forget it, then.
He waved his hand and walked out the door. Fur rushed out after him.
My friend, wait!
He made a conciliatory gesture.
42, and I give you cufflinks. 100% sterling.
The cufflinks were junk, and Kaufman knew it. But at least he now fit the part. He addressed his reflection in the three-way.
Looks like I'm all ready for show. What congregation? I haven't seen you in temple.
Fur was huddled over, counting out his bills.
Just passing through,
Kaufman responded blithely.
Where do you go?
Eldridge Street. Where else?
Polish?
Do I look Polish?
Fur shoved the money into his pants, puffed out his chest.
Eldridge is Ukrainian. You want Polish? Go to Anche Chesed on Norfolk.
Kaufman tightened his tie, tilted his hat, and strode out along Orchard, balled up the khakis and dumped them in the nearest trash. He wound his way through the push carts, vendors peddling everything from pickled herring to Sophie Tucker records. Newsboys hawked the city rags, front pages plastered with the defeat at Okinawa. Happy days were here again. He picked up a knish to celebrate. In a park across the street from the synagogue, Kaufman pegged an old man in a well-worn coat and hat. The guy pulled out a rumpled bag of sunbeam bread, removed an end slice, and began to scatter pieces to the pigeons. They whirled around, a cyclone of feathery gray. Kaufman sat himself on a wooden bench nearby and waited.
"Eventually, they get used to you."
The old man took a rest on the bench. The pigeons followed.
"You have to come regularly. You have to be patient."
He spoke with a thick European accent, but his English was good.
"Would you like to try?"
He held out a handful of crumbs.
"Sure,"
answered Kaufman, and the old man placed the goods in the palm of his hand.
"Now, just wait,"
he instructed soberly, and sat back, looking nonchalant. Nothing happened.
"Are you perhaps not an animal person?"
Kaufman considered the question. He was barely a people person.
"Guess I'm just having an off day."
He offered back the bread.
"Sprinkle it, then."
The old man made a generous gesture. That much he could do. Kaufman released the breadcrumbs, and a flurry of birds swept in.
"Seems they were waiting, too,"
acknowledged the old man. He pulled out another slice and began to tear it into tiny pieces.
"And what are you waiting for, may I ask?" "Pardon me?"
Kaufman stiffened. The old man looked at him. His eyes were encased in deep folds of skin, but held an icy blue intensity that almost made Kaufman turn away.
"This is not a young person's park,"
he said with a wry musicality.
"Don't think I quite qualify as a young person,"
Kaufman countered.
"Compared to me, you are. Everything is relative."
He held out his hands, cupped around a mound of crumbs, and hummed softly. In a few moments, birds began to alight on his arms and shoulders, taking turns to peck at the feed. One stopped for a while on the crown of his hat, watching the proceedings with pious approval.
"I feed squirrels in the morning,"
he said out the side of his mouth.
"Why? Why not? But I must tell you, it is an advanced study." "Squirrels!"
Kaufman nodded respectfully.
"You're not only wise, but courageous. So I'll tell you, I'm actually here looking for a friend. Bird friend or squirrel friend?" "Human friend. Heard he might be around here. Polish. Jewish."
Kaufman threw a glance in the direction of the temple.
"His name is Ichak Levitsky."
Exhaled the old man, then brushed his hands off on his coat.
"I think I know this man."
He faced Kaufman, seemed to be searching for something behind his eyes.
"Yes, yes. He is a member of the congregation."
He gestured to the building behind them, picked a speck off his coat and flicked it to the ground.
"It is Shabbos tonight. Services are at 6.
He rose, and Kaufman stood and extended his hand.
"Thank you, sir. Name's Kaufman. Moses Kaufman."
The old man placed both his hands on Kaufman's. It was only then that Kaufman noticed the tattoo peeking out from under his cuff. The man smiled gently.
"Enjoy your day, Mr. Kaufman,"
he said, and walked off out of the park. 6 o'clock was hours away. Kaufman spent every minute of it pondering pigeons. Thank you. Chapter 64.
You want who?
He squinched his ample nose. Levitsky Ichok, Kaufman repeated.
Who is he looking for, Yosek?
Ichok. You know an Ichok?
Nose turned to his friend.
Ichok?
The friend, puzzled on the Talmudic inquiry.
You mean the Rebbe?
Levitsky is the rabbi.
Kaufman was equally puzzled.
No, he's not the Rebbe, answered Nose. But he is the Rebbe.
The friend explained.
We call him the Rebbe.
Even the Rebbe calls him the Rebbe.
They nodded together in unison.
Yes, he should be here by now.
Nose turned and scanned the seats.
He always comes early to set the prayer books.
He never misses.
No, he never misses. Always here, well before 6.
5 o'clock, to be precise.
The friend looked at his watch.
Look, it is already almost 6.
Nose also looked at his watch.
1 minute 2.
Both men shrugged their shoulders. The absence of Ichok Levitsky didn't trouble them, but it sucked the marrow out of Kaufman.
Where does he live, the Rebbe? Where does he live?
Repeated Nose. Kaufman corked himself, spoke with care.
Do you know where Levitsky lives? Oh, he lives a block away, on this side of Essex Street. The big building on the corner of Houston, 4th floor.
4th? I thought it was 5th, Mendel. Remember we played Mahjong there? I almost plotzed, what with the stairs.
4th, 5th, whatever. It's that way.
Nose shook a finger west. Kaufman didn't pause to say thanks. He spun on his heel and tore down the street. Cut a left onto Houston. The hat flew from his head, but he kept going. He was running as fast as his feet could take him. His feet weren't the problem, though. It was his knee. It gave out halfway up the block.
Christ!
He cursed, but didn't break. A searing bolt shot up his thigh. He gritted his teeth, pumped his arms, and sprinted on. The building was up ahead. He could see it from the backside. He counted up the windows. 1. His knee felt like it was splitting open. 2. Every stride a burst of agony. 3. Shooting up to the middle of his head. 4. His eyes irised in and glazed over.
Whoom!
And the 5th window exploded above him. Glass shattered out, flames firing. Kaufman ducked the falling shards. He bolted for the fire escape and began to climb, hauling himself up the rungs, 3 at a time. At the 5th floor, he took a breath and dove headlong into the blaze.
Ichok! Ichok Levitsky!
He shouted over the roar. He whirled around.
Rebbe!
He cried. A blanket of red and black enveloped him. The fire raged, spitting, screaming. He opened his mouth to call again, but before he could, 2 hands gripped him by the ankles and yanked him to the floor. He crashed to the ground, stunned. But he could breathe. And he could see. He half expected to find the ghost of Therese reaching out for him, or his incinerated parents. But it was a little old man, the man from the park, the pigeon man, the Rebbe. Kaufman whisked him up in his arms and leapt out through the window. Back on Houston, he flagged a checker, placed the Rebbe gently in the back seat, got in and slammed the door.
FDR! North, snap it,
he ordered. They sped off.
Wait! Stop!
Another command. They'd only gone a block. The cab screeched and jerked to a halt. Kaufman threw open the door and swiped up his fedora from the pavement.
All right, you can continue.
He brushed off the hat, sat it in his lap, reached into his pocket, and pulled out a wad of cash.
Here's 50,
he said, thrusting it towards the driver.
Take us to White Plains.
Chapter 65.
Make this your summer bungalow, Yeshiva, and I'm gonna have to charge you rent.
But the crooked grin went flat when the colonel got sight of Kaufman's carryall. It was in the shape of an old man.
He's alive, Kaufman assured him, but it was close.
The colonel spit out his cigar and helped Kaufman lay the Rebbe on the couch. They stood side by side, sizing him up.
He's breathing okay.
The colonel put a hand on Kaufman's shoulder.
How you holding up?
Kaufman had tuned himself out. His knee, the burns.
I'll be fine,
he answered.
Want a drink? Come on, babe, you know I... Just testing, Yeshiva. Don't get your panties in a bunch. I've been off the sauce myself since you left.
Kaufman smiled.
Hey, That's really great, babe. It's impressive. Fuck you. It's a living hell. That too.
Kaufman slipped off his singed coat.
Need any wood split?
He asked. The moon was full and cast a milky glow over the grounds behind the colonel's cabin. Kaufman tossed another log on the fire, watched the sparks rise up and spiral into the air. Fire wasn't good or evil. It was just fire. The colonel came out with a string of hot dogs.
He's still sleeping,
he said, picked up a stick and stabbed it through a couple of dogs, handed it over to Kaufman and made another spit for himself.
Want to tell me?
Kaufman sat on a log and roasted a hot dog.
The girl, the Walsh girl, the one who's freighting me, I was set up. She might have also put that creep onto me back in Newport, though I can't figure that one.
The colonel looked up.
He was on my heels from day one. This guy, trench coat, black hat, smoker. Then, right before I left for Europe, he dropped a cocktail in my gal's apartment. Could have killed her. Could have killed both of us. Got out just in time. Torched my mitts. And now this, the old man. That was what the whole trip to Germany was about. I found your boy, Samuels. He was a prince. Also found out about a prisoner from the camp, from Dora Middlebau. A witness. To your army schmuck's antics?
The colonel lifted his stick out of the flames, lit a fresh stogie with its glowing tip, flipped the dogs and placed them back in.
Yeah, Patrick Walsh. So this prisoner, he's not even in Germany anymore. He's here. He's in New York. And Mara, the Walsh girl, she met me when I got back last night. I just got back last night. Met me on the landing field, and I should have known. I should have known. All this time I've been such a sap. I mean, I told her his goddamn name. Let her write to him.
He's the only other one who would know what really happened at the camp. And they tried to kill him.
Not exactly. I tried to kill myself.
The Rebbe stepped forward.
Frankfurters. They are kosher.
Kaufman had one hot dog, the Colonel four, and the Rebbe 2.5. The Colonel appeared content to enjoy his meal in peace, but not Kaufman. Whenever he asked a question, the Rebbe held up a hand, nodded his head, and smiled. When the Rebbe finally spoke, it was to put a kibosh on further queries.
I do not like to talk when I eat. When I eat, I like to eat.
After that, he politely asked the colonel if he had any beans, which, indeed, the colonel had plenty of. After dinner, Kaufman put another log on the fire. He remembered what it took to get the colonel to open up. Didn't want to go through that again. He also remembered the pigeon feeder's advice. Wait. So he waited. And as they considered the evening sky, the moon veiled with clouds, the Rebbe sighed and slowly began to speak.
After meeting you in the park, I stopped by Yonah Schimmel's for some borscht. Then I went home to my apartment, closed all the windows, and turned on the gas. Why? Why not? Perhaps in honor of my wife, who took a shower with Zyklon B. Perhaps for other reasons. Whatever. I turned on the gas, and I sat down to read. Lucretius, De Rerum Natura. In Latin, of course. But I also read English and Hebrew. Anyhow, after a while, I remembered that I had forgotten it was Shabbos. The candles. We must always light the candles. So I went into the kitchen, and I struck a match, and kaboom.
The Rebbe knocked his knuckles on his head.
That's using your tukas.
Then he pointed to Kaufman.
And you, sir,
he said almost accusingly,
you saved my life.
Kaufman pressed his palms together and blew on his fingertips.
So there never was a conspiracy, he said. Where's an enemy when you need one? Who needs enemies when friends can do equal harm?
The colonel rose from his log, wiped his hands on his trousers, stood there, shifting foot to foot.
Rebbe, shall I call you Rebbe?
He grunted.
Doesn't matter what you call me. You can call me by my number if you wish.
The Rebbe lifted up his left arm and pulled down the sleeve.
65,412.
The colonel stared at the tattoo, then down at his boots.
Rather not, old man. Just as soon use Rebbe, since that's what's been going around the campfire. Anyways, you can use my bed.
He turned to Kaufman.
And you can have the couch back.
Then he stomped off.
I'm going to pitch a tent by the pond.
Kaufman watched the colonel retreat into the woods. He looked back at the Rebbe and tried again.
I guess it'd be tough to stick around after seeing what you saw. Abandoned by God.
The Rebbe riveted his eyes on Kaufman. His face was waxen, sunken-cheeked, but the eyes were electric.
Why do you say that?
He asked, as if Kaufman were the troubled one.
I mean,
Kaufman straightened up.
What kind of a god would allow such suffering?
The The Rebbe nodded his head, and kept nodding his head. He raised his eyes upward, and then snapped them back onto Kaufman.
Who is to say God does not suffer more?
He turned away, picked up a stick, and jostled some embers.
Why me, Mr. Kaufman? You are not a government agent?
Creases formed across Kaufman's brow.
No, I'm just a private eye. You thought I was some agent? Come to get you? Is that why you tried to kill yourself?
The Rebbe raised a reassuring hand.
Please, my departure had been previously ordained. But it did seem your visit was timely. Why would anybody want to kill you?
Kaufman groaned. He knew why.
Rebbe, do people want you dead because of Private Walsh?
Private Walsh?
The soldier at Dora Middlebow.
Yes, I know who he is. Is that all you wanted from me?
Kaufman blinked.
Is there more?
The Rebbe seemed to suck him in.
There is always more, Mr. Kaufman. Please do not be naive.
He stood up, surveyed the sky again.
I am tired, so I will say good night.
So, that's the Rebbe. Hope you've enjoyed this taste of A Beacon of Light. The third and final part of Kaufman's Holiday, chapters 60 to 65. And don't forget, Sunday Night Noir is hosted by Radio Free Brooklyn. If you want them to keep driving, and why wouldn't you, maybe you could consider greasing their wheels. Just go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. You'll figure out what to do from there. You can also sponsor a program. Kaufman's Holiday would be nice. Could get your name listed in these fancy end credits. I'd like to offer a special thanks to Chris Durian for our theme song, Case Closed. And to Arthur Rosen for the solo piano improvisations that weave this web together. All right, I'm tired too, so I'll also say goodnight. This is Matt Mittler signing off, but I'll be back. You'll hear me coming, my floor chimes clacking on the cobblestones.